Hey there, coffee lovers. Do you want to make your morning cup of Joe something special? Let's talk about Joe Bean Coffee, a gem right here in Rochester. I'm Chris Lindstrom, host of the Food About Town podcast and co-founder of Lunchador. I've been a longtime fan of Joe Bean. Kathy, Dina, and the whole team are passionate about their coffee and this city, and it comes through in every cup of Joe Bean Coffee that I brew at home. Joe Bean has been a part of Rochester for years, over a decade, building lasting community and a sense of belonging for everyone who loves coffee. Next time you need beans, head over to Joe Bean's Roastery at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester or shop online at joebeanroasters.com. Even better, subscribe to Joe Bean's Perpetual Joy and you'll receive freshly roasted beans on your schedule and never be without your favorite coffee. Joe Bean is more than just coffee. It's a community, a commitment, and a cup full of care.
Welcome to Dialed In. I'm Wade Reed.
I'm Aaron Pascucci.
And we are joined, as always, by our producer, Chris Lindstrom.
Good morning.
And Chris is steering the ship today. Yeah. We're going to talk about Chris's time in Calgary and just very enlightening trip coffee-wise. And,
for sure.
I love the energy you came back with, although it was maybe a little bit more angsty than I would have expected. But we'll get into it. Aaron, how's the week?
Week's been busy.
Yeah.
I am dealing with the worst thing a homeowner can. Mold.
Yeah. That's
so just... my coffee setup has been the only saving grace and is now on a floor in a corner of my three season room.
All right. Yes. Yeah. I mean, if you had to find a home for it, that's not so bad.
It is what it is.
At least it's the third season and not the fourth season. So like
exactly that. It's the no season room in that season, right?
I was gonna say a three season room really isn't a three season room. It's like a one and a half season room.
Depends on how hardy you are.
Have you guys seen that meme that goes around about seasons in Rochester?
I'm sure it's fairly straightforward.
It's like summer, fake spring, winter, gotcha. Now real winter.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fair.
That's pretty accurate. Chris, how's your week going?
Oh man, it was a busy week. Curling season just started.
Oh, that's so awesome.
That
yes,
adds like
yes.
another night of my week that always has something going on.
Oh gosh, yeah.
So it was like, it was podcast Monday night, which, you know, was great, and podcast Tuesday night, which was also great. I did a podcast Wednesday before curling.
Oh, okay.
We had on Emily Hesney Lynch's podcast, It's a Lot, we had Kat from Kat Bucha over.
Okay, yeah.
She interviewed her before having her second kid, and now interviewed her after.
Oh, that's funny.
And we played clips from the first episode of what she thought was going to happen.
That's so funny.
It turned out great. Definitely go listen to that. It was a good time.
That's a good one. Awesome. All right, so let's talk about Calgary, because we have a lot here.
Yeah.
And I think we just want to start out with, like, give us like three stories that kind of encapsulate, you know, three or four, however many. What are the stories that really illustrate to us what you experienced in Calgary?
Yeah. So first, let me give the primer. When I went, I didn't know that the scene was what I found out it to be, which is, I'm just going to spoil this ahead of time.
Awesome.
I will say, I've been to a lot of major cities, and I think it was the highest density of high-end coffee shops in any city I've ever been to.
Okay.
And it was such a phenomenal coffee experience that it shook me up a bit.
Yes, it did.
But, so let me take a step back, because I didn't know that going into my trip. The trip was based around going to paleontological sites.
Sweet, yeah.
And museum that my wife wanted to go to. We went to Banff to go look at beautiful Rocky Mountains and mineral-filled turquoise lakes.
Yeah, sounds amazing.
And I made a list, and I saw, oh, there were some nice coffee shops. But that's what you do in any city.
Yeah, exactly. You're just doing kind of your standard thing. I think this is something that is interesting about when we talk about our travels. Like, I think most people visit cities on, like, business trips, right?
Yeah.
And you're often, like, out there with like goals and like you want to actually see the coffee scene. And like, so it is a little different for us when we travel. It's like you can recommend places to people, but it's like we understand you're probably only going to see one or two of these. Like, we're actually there to see this, like, yeah, part of it. So
it is part of it. And also, like, what I've found is during travel, if I'm going somewhere and I really want to be there, that's how I like to travel, is we're there and we want to experience what is going on there. And food and drink is the lens through that.
Absolutely.
But starting with, like, you know, this shop's going to be great. It's either you've heard of it, it's a national level shop.
Right.
And you go in and you ask questions. Where else should I go?
Right.
What other coffee shop should I go to? You know, what food things should I go to? What am I missing on my list that you know, because you are a local, you're a barista, so, you hear everything.
Right.
So what do you do, or where are you looking for your research before you show up and get to ask those questions? Because that's always, you know, my wife, same team, she's like, hey, we're going on a trip here.
Yes. Yeah,
that's my family. Not, do you want to go here? We're going here.
Fair.
You know, she's like, do you want to go in any coffee shops? And I'll often get on a couple things, but if you're not searching the right neighborhood or whatever, it can be really hard to find, like, the place that you're want.
For sure.
That we specifically would be looking for.
So when I travel, I make an invasion plan of research because... Right. This will surprise nobody who knows me. I'm an obsessive researcher, and I want to be prepared. So the reason I do it is not because this is the agenda every day. I want to be so prepared that I don't need an agenda.
Yeah. Yep.
That I feel like I want to go to something and I have it on my list.
Mm-hmm,
right. Oh, I really want a sandwich. That means I have four sandwich places on my list.
Yep.
I've got traditional Vietnamese. I've got a modern place. I've got this. Then you can cater down. So I don't have to do research in the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
exactly.
I can be present and not have to worry about where to go.
Yeah,
because I've already done the work.
You're mimicking a little bit of what it's actually like to live in that city, where you know your options and then you just sort of select based on where you are, what else you're doing, that kind of thing. Can I ask one point of clarification?
Please.
When you say densest high-end specialty, or the densest group of high-end specialty coffee shops, do you mean like compared to like the population of the city? Do you mean like in a specific neighborhood? Like how did you discover that?
That's fair. So what I'll use for that is concentration, ease of getting to, and what covers a city.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So let's say New York might have the same amount or slightly more of this level of coffee shops.
Right.
But it's spread over.
Yeah, that's in a city.
In ways that are really hard to get to.
Yes.
And if you're in one area of New York, you might not actually have good coffee available to you.
Right, right.
So like when we went into Flushing in December last year, there was no good coffee in the entirety of Flushing.
Oh, okay.
That is...
Sorry to all our listeners.
That's a huge population, right? There's a lot of people who live there.
Yeah, yeah.
There was no good coffee in the entirety of Flushing, Queens.
Yeah.
Which is like a small city.
Yeah. And they're like, what do you mean? We just opened a new Dunkin' Donuts, right? Like,
right.
That's, yeah, yeah.
Or have you been to Mr. Kim's down the road?
So, and like, I did a lot of research. So when I went to Calgary, I looked at, so it's a city. Let me get to like population.
It's about 2 million.
Quick, 2 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. Metro.
Quick, quick question here. When you decided where you were going to stay.
Yes.
Was that before or after you had done the food research?
So I knew enough to see that I had good food options. I knew that where we stayed, we could either do public transport on a train or drive. We ended up driving most of the time because it wasn't a crazy parking city.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew I could take public transport into popular areas and that I could walk to multiple places that I wanted to walk to.
Nice. Yeah.
So when you look at a metro of 2 million, right? That's like Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Right? It's Milwaukee. It's way less than Chicago, right? This is what we would call a mid-size city.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? Double the size of Buffalo.
Yep.
Double the size of Rochester, 2.5 times Rochester Metro. So it's a bigger city, but it's not unmanageable. It's an easy city to get around. Yes, there's occasional traffic, but by and large, you can get around quickly. Almost every one of the specialty shops we're going to talk about, I could get to within 20 minutes of the hotel.
Okay.
Driving.
Yeah. Sure.
And that's talking about even getting into the suburbs ones.
Okay.
20 minutes was like max. Most of them I could get to in under 15.
That's really funny. That's what people say about Rochester, right? It's a 20-minute city.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah. So, but to replicate that at that scale, I mean, that's an infrastructural wonder.
For sure. Like, and there were times, right, obviously during peak times. But otherwise, it was actually, the city was fairly concentrated. It reminded me of other cities that have like a concentrated city. And then the suburbs are more like Toronto, you know, some of the suburbs around Toronto, East York, where they don't feel like suburbs. They feel like city extended.
Yes. Yeah. There are some of those in my experience in the Chicago area too.
Yeah.
There are a few of those where you don't even fully realize you've passed into a suburb. And then there are, you know, and then there's like your Napiers, right. You know, things like that. But
so we got to those, but it felt like you never felt you left the city until you left. And then it was Midwest fields.
Okay.
Not like Rochester, cool. Upstate New York, but like Midwest, huge tracts of land.
Awesome. Yeah.
But anyways, so
good Monty Python reference.
So it's, so when I say density, there were, so I went to, now I'm going to say the brands, not the locations.
Okay.
So I went to six different owned shops.
Yeah.
So by name, six different places. One of them had 10 locations.
Okay.
One of them had 4 or 5 locations.
This is amazing.
That's a lot.
And I'm, so let's just start talking about the coffee. So one, food scene was great. And I'm going to say right away, I'm now an unofficial advocate for travel to Calgary. If you want to make a trip somewhere, I could not recommend it enough. The food scene was great. There's a cool art scene. It's affordable to get to from flying from Toronto. And you can get Rocky Mountains, you can get Badlands and dinosaurs, and you get amazing coffee scene. This should be a destination for people. And it's just a good hang. People are excited that you showed up.
That's cool. Yeah.
So Let's go ahead and start, because let's start with one that it wasn't the first place we went to. Actually, you know what? Let me do the first, not in like chronological overall, but it started our trip. So we needed lunch. We went into an area and then we're like, oh, you know what? It's been a long trip already because we flew out early in the morning. Let's go get coffee.
Sure.
So I went to one of the places on my list. The name indicates that it's probably going to be a nerd place right away. And it's called Q-Lab.
Huh.
Oh, yeah.
So Q-Lab by Chronicle Coffee Roasters.
Yep.
And you go in and it's like, okay, this is like, this is their, like the place you go in is the nerd bar.
Okay.
So like, Aaron, you've talked about Sightglass in
San Francisco.
In San Francisco, they had like the main bar and then they had a nerd bar upstairs.
Yes.
This was like just that.
Yeah.
So you go in and it's like, oh, well, espresso, we have 6 different options. 4 of them are competition level coffees.
Yeah.
So when we're talking, I'm going to say competition level a bunch, but I'm talking like niche varietals, high process, like one of them was like, oh, this is a, you know, geisha that was lactic acid fermented with something else kind of stuff. Like there's a lot of high process coffees there.
So to peel that back just a little bit, when you say, are they telling you these are competition?
No. I'm
like,
just saying, like,
you're talking like when you hear a barista competitor talk about a coffee that they like poured over and selected from all the really niche options.
Yeah.
This is that kind of thing.
That's how I perceive it too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because when I've seen competition people, now, right? You know, when you know, the Joe Bean people were competing back in the day, they were like, oh, we're just bringing this great coffee.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And now it seems like a lot of the competition stuff is like super niche when it comes to super high process coffees, super rare coffees, limited coffees. It just seems like that's the trend right now. And I might be missing something too.
I think that's incredibly accurate. It is really interesting because I can go back as far as like, 2007, 2006, when the person from Intelligentsia, whose name I can't remember, won the WBC. You know, he was doing that with coffees. He had been on the farm for harvest and they were like a month off the porch when he won. Yeah. Right. So like, it's kind of been that way for a long time. And it's interesting. That's kind of one of the barriers to entry with competition now, but it illustrates really well the quality and the caliber of coffees you're talking about. So
for sure.
That's okay. I just wanted to clarify whether they were saying like, no, we almost use these in competition or someone did use these in competition. Like, so, but you know, it's, they're talking about them or they're presenting them the same way.
Yeah.
People are presenting at competition.
Yeah. So this was a high level. The coffees were what I would consider high level, and they had still some classic stuff, you know, still some like really nice wash things. They had multiple, you know, geshas and limited varietal stuff on some high process things. And I'm going to use that term. High process is how I think about those things.
Sure. Yeah.
And it could be any number of thermal shocks or co-ferments. I'm just using the lumped high process for those kind of coffees.
Yeah.
We're going to use that a lot today. I go in, so it's, you know, espresso options, pour over options, batch options. And I saw them. They were, both of the guys were, when there wasn't customers, they were grinding on Commandante grinders. So they were hand grinding.
They were hand grinding
using these German Commandante hand grinders. And I'm like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
Cause they had grinders for things.
Okay.
So, and I'm like, hey, what are you guys doing? You guys, you know, training or prepping for this? I'm like, oh yeah, there's a Commandante like competition this Saturday coming up. Yeah. If you want to just, you know, go sign up online and go show up.
Have you guys used one of those?
I've done hand grinding in the past, but this was like the Hario one.
Yeah. I had the Hario one. I had a Per something or other. It fit in the AeroPress. That was why it was sold.
Ah.
Yeah, and look, they can be. It's not a bad experience if you're doing small volume.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
If you're doing large volume, it's not fun.
Standart is sponsored. I shouldn't say sponsored, but I think they're sponsored by Commandante.
Okay,
and so that grinder is everywhere. I see it online a lot.
Yeah,
and I went and looked. I was like, everybody's got this. Is it really that good? It's like a $200 hand grinder. Like they are not cheap.
Yeah,
and I can't imagine like using it as a primary at all.
I in my reading about it, they convinced me that it would be worth it.
Yeah.
Just their whole process and even the way they select their steel. Like it seems like they are incredibly intentional and maybe doing something that is unique to that sector. Mm-hmm. And I think I really want to try one. But
yeah.
The last time I used a hand grinder, I was hand grinding espresso in Jared Sickler's kitchen, and that was always, it was always just a couple of meatheads trying to outdo each other who can, you know, like keep this awful hand grinder that he had going at this like super fine level, you know, so we could put it in the Pavone. We were just dorks about it. So I have trauma from hand grinding, but that's amazing. Like,
but that was my intro to Calgary Coffee was you go into a shop that has all these high coffees. They had all these different options. And then they're also doing that. And like, oh, yeah, well, there's this thing over at this roastery. You can just go and come and hang out.
Yeah.
Sweet. And that was the first welcoming to the scene. And I mean, the place was phenomenal. Right.
Right.
And what else? I'm going to use some things. I'm really trying not to be hyperbolic when I say these things, and this is not out of, you know, dislike or, you know, distaste with some of what's going on here, is if that shop just opened up, it would shake up everything that's going on locally in a way that's hard. I think that's my opinion, is that something like that just shows up, it would be so jarring.
Sure.
Because like we have some great coffee shops, but there's this was just like at a whole different level of coffee level and, you know, the execution of presenting this coffee and everything else. It was phenomenal. And that was my first experience in town. And I asked the question, where else should I go?
Great.
And some of the places were already on my list. So I'm going to put the whole list out right now.
Okay.
So, The I'm going to kind of go in order of like the originators of this scene in Calgary was Phil and Sebastian, which Wade already knew when I mentioned it.
Amazing coffee. Like, and again, going back probably like almost 20 years.
Yeah.
I guess I don't know exactly when it was founded, but I remember the first Phil and Sebastian I had. And it was just at the time, this was when, you know, Gesha was still super new. So like we didn't have access to that kind of thing. But I just remember being super impressed by how they roast. And like, you know, as a roaster, it's really uncommon for me to drink something and not think this is how I would have done it differently. I would have done none of their coffees differently. They are experts at their craft. And yeah, just I've always really loved and respected them.
They have 10 locations in Calgary.
And they deserve it. Like that's that comes, I think, just out of that. That expertise, that passion, that acumen with what they're doing.
So part of what I want to talk about them is, yes, they were the my understanding, and if this gets back to Calgary, I do have some contacts I'm hoping to reach out to.
Yeah.
To talk about the scene a little bit more in detail.
Yeah, we'll be here for it for sure.
So if I'm getting something wrong and this gets back to Calgary, because I'm tagging Calgary Tourism on this damn episode.
Hell yeah, we are.
Because it seemed like they were the bellwether of this whole scene, and that with 10 locations, they are still executing at a really high level, and that each location has passionate people who are making great coffee. Yes, some of the things, and I think, to be honest, edges towards what you like in specialty coffee.
Yeah.
Some of them were edging a little more developed, you know, not super light.
Sure.
They were edging towards like specialty medium or specialty medium minus, right? It's edging towards a lot of what you like to roast at.
Yeah.
You know, not dead light, but a little bit more developed. But they also had high processed coffees. All the locations you could get pour overs, selection of espressos, like, and they also were developing food at these locations.
Which like, is that's the most amazing thing to me, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Usually, like, developing food is such a distraction for making good coffee. And, like, you just really have to have, like, that core of we're super dedicated to the coffee and we're going to keep this rolling. But we can talk more about that. Yeah. Like, sorry, I keep jumping in, but I'm like,
I do love the
amazing
fact
to hear.
That their regular shops had good food. And then because they have the presence of how many places they run, that they were developing new food concepts within their places. So like, oh, we developed a donut concept. We're only doing it at these locations until it's finished.
Oh,
they were developing a whole new food menu for breakfast that they had in like half the locations at that point. And they were like dishes.
And yeah, that's what I was going to ask is what does developing food look like at these places?
So it's like, you know, the basic one might just be breakfast sandwiches and, you know, baked goods and other stuff. But they had developed like almost like a hybrid, not quite brunch menu, but like halfway in between, where it's simpler, but it's all like they had multiple things involved. It was just a more complete thought of what is a food experience we want to give the customers. But it's like the donuts were really good. All the food was really good. And you go to one in the suburbs and it was just as good as one that was in this, you know, building that had multiple different concepts in it. You know, an old building where they put multiple different things on a floor.
Yeah.
Little food hall kind of thing.
Yep.
And we went to multiple locations and they were all good.
Yeah.
And they were all hit the same level of consistency. And the people could talk about coffee articulately, but they weren't pushing it on anybody either. It was essentially like the local Starbucks in ways.
Yeah.
But the level of coffee execution was also really, really good.
That's cool. And I want to come back to, and we'll come back to this later. I think our idea of pushing it and other people's idea of pushing, like I really want to stick on that.
I'm excited.
I think that's an interesting wrinkle. So, just want to note that you said that and come back to it later.
So,
and real quick to clarify that, you mean pushing like the coffee knowledge on people or pushing what you're doing in the coffee shop?
Well, so that's like the seam that I want to rip at is Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get. Yeah. I think that's interesting that you noted that they're not pushing it.
Yes, and that defines the Calgary scene, that they're hitting this level of execution that is exceptional. And I'm telling, if any coffee person wants to go to a city just to drink coffee, Calgary should be in your top like three places to go. This is not an exaggeration.
You should
want to go there just to drink coffee if you're a coffee nerd.
And I want to reiterate that, to our knowledge, Chris is not making money saying this.
No, yeah. Not yet. I will.
Hey, real quick, where else have you, quick list of cities where you've had good coffee experiences to compare to?
If you put it in your top three, give me like one or two of the others.
So I thought Atlanta was really good.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Atlanta's super underrated coffee-wise.
Atlanta was really enjoyable. I need to get back to Charlotte because I had some stuff, but it was a few years ago. I'm wondering where it's ended up.
Yeah.
Be honest, like I wouldn't like, yes, New York, I went to some really good shops, but it's hard to get to as many things as you want to get to.
Yeah. And I think that the way that money has treated that scene is it's going to end up in a really interesting place.
Right. Because like in many ways, like Calgary isn't polluted by all the VC money. Of that stuff
that we know of, right? Like that's right.
And I'm sure there's some.
I'm
sure there's some behind these because some of these locations are wild.
Okay.
You know, Toronto. Like there's some great coffee in Toronto.
Yeah,
but
it's in pockets.
It's hard to get to stuff.
Yeah.
San Francisco is a really good coffee city.
Yeah. Okay.
Seattle was a bit tough for me. Like I went to some great shops, but I only had like two or three I liked.
Yeah.
Last time I went, like a few years ago. I just don't have a lot, to be honest. I don't have a lot of great, great coffee cities.
Yeah.
There are great shops in the cities.
Right.
But there's not a great coffee scene. There are great shops, and maybe as an aggregate, you can get there, but this seems more cohesive too.
That's amazing. So,
pivoting back.
Yeah.
Seemed like the evolution of this then went from Phil and Sebastian to Monogram Coffee.
Yep.
Which was started by a few people, but notably co-owner and co-founder Ben Poot, who was from Phil and Sebastian, started Monogram Coffee, which has, I think, four or five locations. Some are in higher traffic areas, like right near a university. And he is a multi-time Canadian barista champion, I think five times.
Yeah.
And has had top five world finishes, I think, three or four times. And I believe, and this is the part I'm going to get wrong, I think they're also, I'm not sure they're involved, but there is a coffee importer or distributor involved.
Okay.
That I think is bringing a lot of this stuff in for a lot of the scene.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, when you're in competitions, you reach that level, a lot of the incentive is being put in front of producers and being connected with the supply chain in a way that can allow you to leverage that into like, okay, now I can bring in these super special, you know, and I can communicate with these producers and get them on some of these high-end processes and things like that. And so I think that is kind of as elitist as competitions have become, like one of the advantages is like, if you can reach that level, you are connected to a totally different stratosphere of the industry. And so I think if this is what we're seeing, it makes perfect sense to me that importing is kind of a part of it. And it is the kind of thing that I would certainly move into if I had that kind of success. So.
Yeah. So the importer that I saw at the competition I went to was Apex Coffee Imports.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. They were doing sampling at the Commandante thing, you know, cupping and like, this was, you know, this is an industry thing. This wasn't like a public thing.
Okay, yeah.
It was definitely a high industry thing, but they were showing up there, and I saw some of the coffees I saw at other places.
Cool.
So it seems like they are an important part of the scene, Apex Coffee Importers. But Monogram, I'd say, was, to me, a step up coffee-wise from Phil and Sebastian.
Okay.
And almost every shop I went to had like competition people at it.
Yeah.
I'd say, I think every single one people were competing in some form or another.
Cool.
Monogram, I thought, was a step up. Their coffee was phenomenal. The consistency was great, even at high volume locations. they still executed really nice breakfast sandwiches that were complete thoughts. Again, same kind of thing, high processed coffees. You could get an espresso, you could get it pour over, you could get batch, and it was everything. And all the specialty drinks were good too, right? You know, all of your like your lattes and other things, they were thought out, they were seasonal. But when you looked at the ads, they had a PSL, right?
Yeah.
They had a pumpkin spice thing.
Why wouldn't you?
Right. They had a pumpkin spice thing. These weren't elitist. They weren't toned as elitist shops. Like Phil and Sebastian, they were advertising those same things, right? They're advertising PSLs. They're advertising, you know, fall this, you know, they want to, they're bringing the people.
Right.
Monogram was doing the same thing, but they also had the common, they were hosting the Comandante event. It was the only one happening in Canada. It's happening one per country.
Right.
Like the one in the US was in Houston. The one in Canada was Calgary.
Which should tell you something. Yeah.
And that was, they were doing a world tour of events. And that was the place they did it. And it was at Monogram's Roastery.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And the level of coffee that was coming out of the place was, every time I went, I'm like, oh my God, it's so exceptional. And then, like, the people who were just serving you coffee were competition people who were doing high-end stuff. And you go there, you go to another location in the suburbs, and they're giving you advice about where to go and how to enjoy the scene. And it was so collaborative and positive. There wasn't, this is, you know, we say this at Behind the Glass, this community over competition. This scene embodied that. It was cohesive, right? Everybody was saying, by the end, I didn't have somebody that hadn't recommended one of the places I went to.
Yeah.
Did they actually know, like, did they say, go see Phil at so-and-so?
Yes. 100%. Yeah. They would say, go see this person.
Yeah, my friend who
go talk to him and say, hey, you sent him there.
Yeah.
Like, they wanted you to have a great time. And Monogram, to me, was, I think it was that evolutionary step. This is no shade on Phil and Sebastian. They're tremendous. And if they had 10 locations, if they had 5 locations, like here or in Buffalo or Syracuse or Pittsburgh,
yeah,
right? They would maul the scene immediately, because it's just like they're hitting this beautiful level of approachable, and coffee's amazing and the food's great. It would just kill at every level. I think what I want to do, I want to take a break before I go into some of the more niche spots.
Okay, yeah, sure.
And then we'll dive in and then we'll do some more of our philosophical talk.
Definitely.
And one quick thing, just to you know, reinforce what Chris has been talking about, these places. If you go to their websites, you know, most coffee places have a learned section now, right? How to brew, right? The classes that these places have on their websites are totally different.
Ooh, I'm excited. I haven't seen that. We'll talk about that when we get back. So, we'll be right back.
And we are back. You're unofficially sponsored by the Tourism Board of Calgary podcast. I wouldn't turn it down, especially if it comes with a trip, because you are making it sound like this is a place I want to go. So
yeah, I'm super excited, and this is a place where I'm 100% going back to. I don't go to a lot of cities and say I have to go back.
Right.
This is one where we're gonna have to go back. So we finished the first half talking about Monogram. Again, can't recommend them enough. If you're gonna buy some coffee from Calgary, any one of these places does great work. But you can get it from the next place we're going to talk about, which is 8 Ounce. This place is a little bit hard to talk about because it's hard to define what it is.
Wow.
So 8 Ounce Coffee is it seems like their main business is as the importer of coffee machines.
Okay.
Both for people and for shops.
So Calgary's Whole Latte Love.
Yes.
Sort of.
But I think they're bigger.
Okay.
I don't know that for sure, but they seemed like they had some like, I think they might be the biggest one in Canada.
Oh, okay, cool.
So not just Calgary. I think they're the biggest one in Canada.
Right.
I don't say that 100%. They had intimated, let's say I walked around the place and it was not tiny.
Nice.
They had really nice offices and they had a very organized warehouse and they were very nice to walk me around. Like, they had a shop inside there that you could just go try stuff. They had some machines that were running, consumer machines.
Awesome.
Like, they had one of the X Blooms.
Oh, okay. Ooh. Yeah, sweet.
So they had one of those. And they're like, yeah, well, I think this would be better on this versus this. And then they were using that.
That's machine people who know coffee.
They were also, I was also seeing techniques I've never seen anywhere else. So they're using one of those, like, you know, distribution pour over things.
Yeah.
They were doing it concentrated and adding hot water after.
Okay. Yep.
We've
talked about this,
and
right?
And I'd never seen that before.
Yep.
And that was, I saw it there. I'm like, wait, what are you doing? Why are you pouring hot water in this? He's like, well, I think this extracts this better. It gets less of this.
Yep.
I'm like, oh, you're making choices
yep.
based on actual opinions and what you like.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which I fucking love. It doesn't mean I loved that the most. I love that you had an opinion and you're like, this is how I'm going to do this for this coffee.
Yeah.
And then at that shop, no, shop. This is a fucking, like, distribution warehouse place. Yeah. They also had coffees from all over Canada.
At the Coffee Super Center.
Yeah, it's a coffee super center. You get coffees from all over Calgary, from all over Canada, some international. Like, one of the guys we were talking to for a while, and we were, you know, talking about the scene and everything and talking about, you know, Rochester and other things. Well, he's like, yeah, this one's getting a little bit old. This is one of the sample bags. He's like, here, have this South Korean bag of coffee.
Yeah, nice.
And he just handed it to me and walked out. And
love it.
Like,
love it.
I tasted amazing things. Like, it was a great place just to visit, but it seems like they're also, when people needed things for competition, they could go there.
Yeah.
They would help.
They would sponsor
from giving, you know, getting them the coffee they needed to prep for competitions. Because, hey, a lot of stuff is expensive.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, sommeliers that are tasting great wines. You can't always do it yourself. Sometimes you have to work at a place that is helping you with that or otherwise. And this, they are being good stewards to the community while they are also a fairly sizable company.
Yeah.
Doing great work. So shout out to them. They were great. The other place I want to shout out before I go to the last one is Particle Coffee. So right now it's just a pop-up.
Cool.
So it's that small.
Wow. Interesting.
But almost every person I talked to said, you need to go to Particle.
Okay.
It's Fine. A pop-up Particle. In a co-work space.
That's fantastic.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he's doing 3 days a week, and it's all pour over an espresso.
The niche of the niche. Yeah.
It's niche of niche. And shout out to Alex, like, just a genuinely, genuinely nice guy. But he cared about every aspect of what he was doing. So he's not roasting, obviously. But he had he would have two different sourced coffees from two different places. When I went, it was one of the places in Toronto and the coffee from Tim Wendelbo in Norway. Norway?
Norway.
I think Tim Wendelbo's Norwegian.
I think so. Yeah.
But so the coffees were a great shop in Toronto. And Tim Wendelbo's coffee, who is one of the notable barista champions, you know, one of the earlier notable ones, and has a huge influence on the industry at large.
Oslo, Norway.
Yeah. Yeah. So he had those two coffees, and every single one of them, so this thing, a lot of those other places had high process stuff, every single coffee he had was washed.
Right.
He likes washed coffees. Every single coffee he brought in was washed.
Yeah. I mean,
everyone, and I know you love those too.
It's the most consistent process for sure.
Yeah. Right. But everyone was that he had no other processes.
Fantastic.
And that's what he likes. So he served that. And I'm like, well, I'm going to have this coffee, you know, pour over, and I'll have this espresso. And he gives me, you know, Carrie hers and mine. And we're drinking. I'm like, man, where's the espresso? And he's walking some of the over. So I'm like, hey, let me know when you're ready for the espresso. I don't want to overpower the pour over.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because, like, he knew he wasn't going to serve it until it was time.
Exactly. Yep.
And this is in a little co-work space run by one person.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of service that he was doing. And everybody told me to go, and they were right. I went back twice. It was great. Coffees were great. Execution was great. But it was the hospitality that was great. And this is not a shade in the other place. Like Monogram and Phil and Sebastian are, they're pushing coffee faster.
Yeah, you're getting, yeah, yeah.
They're executing very well. And they were hospitable in that form, but it's not the same as a curated hospitality experience.
Yeah.
Q-Lab was very good, but Alex as a single person was executing that at a very high level. So shout out to Particle, doing great work. I'm sure they will have a full shop at some point. He's awesome. Really enjoyed him as a person and the shop. So Wade, why don't you put some plugs out for Aporia?
I have actually two other plugs.
Oh, please.
Besides Aporia. So Ugly Duck is starting industry nights.
Awesome. Yeah.
Their first one's November 20th. And they're literally just like, let's get all the people in the room and let's talk. So I don't know how structured these are going to be. I know that at one point I was invited onto a panel, but I haven't heard a follow-up. So it might not even be that structured. It might literally just be Ugly Ducks open at night and it's for coffee people. So
love that.
Third Thursdays, they have like the next 4 months planned out. Definitely let's try to rally behind that.
By the way, real quick, all coffee people, if you're not working in coffee, like you're still
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
He made sure to specify that since he's calling it industry night.
Exactly. Yes. Like if you care about this industry in any capacity. So that's the first one. Second one, November 15th, we're getting another low phase drop. Marvin and I tasted through some really special coffees and he landed somewhere that I definitely wouldn't have landed, which is a unique like stretch challenge for me as a roaster. But I think what he's going to do with this is going to be awesome. So November 15th, I can't think of the time off the top of my head. I think 10 a.m. out at the out at Aporia's Roastery at the warehouse. We're going to put some espresso through the Strata, which is always a good time, and do some pour overs. So, but other than that, aporiacoffee.com and Aporia Coffee on Instagram and or Aporia Coffee Co. maybe on Instagram. I don't even know my own Instagram handle. I just post to it. I think that's it.
Awesome.
And for those of you, November 15th is a Saturday.
Yes.
And the 20th is a Thursday. And I believe Rory said he's going to try and section off Thursdays for that.
Yeah, every third Thursday. Yeah.
Great. And Aaron, if you want to look at any photography stuff, I don't know if you've got anything new.
Nothing major new. I'm going to be trying to start a new Instagram page, as seems to be the thing.
So it is.
Focused on people. I met a wonderful Sophia, I think her name was, from Mercury. She's one of the baristas there now. And she was like, so what do you do with all these photos? And it was one of those things that was like, I don't really know. And I feel stupid that I don't have a great answer with that. So
it's all right. We all get there sometimes.
Yeah.
And then just want people to check out other shows on the Lunch at Or Podcast Network. Also go vote for some of the other shows that are nominated for Best of in City. Some of the Behind the Glass people are nominated for Best Photographer. I think Richard Cologne and Quad J are both nominated for Best Photographer. Go vote there. One of the Lunch at Or shows is nominated for Best Podcast. That's Bossy ROC, Kelly Bush and Kelly Metris from Union Street Tavern, Marshall Street, Salinas. They do a business show and they've been so open and honest about their experience and telling people about ups and downs. It's really a great show. Vote for them for Best Podcast. Really appreciate that. We have some people up for Best Artist. I think Magnus is up for Best Artist. Nice. I know we have other people that are up for things. If you see anybody on the Lunch at Or Podcast Network, vote for them on the city thing. It really does make people feel good about what they're doing. And it's always a great thing to do.
Awesome.
So thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back next time with more
Dialed In.
Boo.
I tried.
This has been a presentation of the Lunch at Or Podcast Network.
Sponsor the podcast network, Visit Alberta. Come on.